I'd like to invite Don to come up.
And if we could have our Queen's Medal Award people up at the front. We have three comfy chairs so that we can embarrass you well and properly. So don't worry, it won't take long. Well, thank you very much, and happy St. Patrick's Day. I must say, it does take a certain amount of spirit or gumption to celebrate something to do with Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth on St. Patrick's Day, but that's what being a Unitarian's all about. Yes, sir, and welcome to QEDE, our heavy metal celebration. The QEDE thing was the obvious play on AC/DC. And yet, now you get it. Right. D.E., by the way, is Duchess of Edinburgh. I looked up the Queen's titles. She's got a million of them. So, now, the service today is about community. And let's think about community and how it sustains us and how we sustain it. The word community, well, we're all Canadians, so, of course, naturally, we like to hyphenate community. It's our religious community. That's kind of the first hyphen. And Beacon is our religious community. And we have been at this for 30 years now. And sometimes we kind of forget. We forget that this is the stuff we've been doing day in, day out, week in and week out. And the contributions that we make, we, you know, sometimes forget about them, take them for granted. That's just part of the landscape. We get caught up in the moment of what we do and what we're about, that both as a community and as individuals, we're just too busy to see the difference we make, both in Beacon, our community, and in the community at large. There's those other hyphens I was talking about, and community at large gets two because it's a larger community. But every once in a while, something happens. There's an event or a celebration where we step back. And we appreciate that which we have done, that which we have achieved. And the Queen's 60th anniversary, her Diamond Jubilee, was one such moment. It was a very, very big party, and people were awarded medals for outstanding contributions to community all over the Commonwealth and what is left of the British Empire. Now, I'd like to say something about size. Size is really valued in our North American society. Bigger's better. Can I supersize those fries for you? There are mega congregations in the United States of 40,000 plus members, and they have to meet in football stadiums. So when you compare our little religious community to that, we seem kind of small. And even in the context of Unitarian congregations, Beacon's kind of small. We're not all that big compared to that mega church in Vancouver or the mega church on the North Shore. We can seem to ourselves sometimes quaint, suburban. How can greatness arise from such a modest-sized community? Well, let's take the metaphor into the realm of physics, because in physics, volume is one measure, but what may be more important in our equation is mass. What sort of mass, what sort of impact can something that's very small have on the world at large, in our community at large, for the whole world, that better? Well, if you look at particle physics, look at the smallest building blocks for your answer. Because you may have heard in the news just this last week, the news about the CERN accelerator in Switzerland, where they found evidence of the proof of what is called the God particle. This is the Higgs boson particle. It's the smallest building block in the entire universe, and yet it's a fundamental to our understanding of how the universe works scientifically. Everything, the supersized fries, those mega congregations, they all depend on this, the very smallest of particles. They're nothing without it. U.S. anthropologist Margaret Mead famously said, "Never doubt that a small group of thoughtful and committed citizens can change the world. Indeed, it is the only thing that ever has." So, let us now introduce our own small cadre of Higgs boson particles right over here. This small and thoughtful group of committed citizens have helped to change the world, and they've also think, four, no less than four Queen's Medal winners right here in our own small community. First of all, I'd like to introduce Sandy Burpee, as if he needs introduction. He was presented his medal by the Mayor and Council of the City of Coquitlam. The award was presented for his strong leadership and his ability to engage others, his tireless work to issues related to poverty and homelessness in our region. The activities cited included the instrumental role in establishing the Coquitlam Depot for the Food Share Bank, Share Food Bank, 8 years of coordinating the weekly food bank, for establishing the cold, wet weather map program and the bridge shelter to house our region's homeless population, restructuring and chairing the homelessness and the housing task group, and his years as an active member of the Coquitlam Search and Rescue. Sandy, the floor is yours.
Well, thank you for that introduction, Don. Mostly receiving the medal was an opportunity to be embarrassed in front of a lot of people. And it continues. And I forgot to bring my cape today, so. In any event, I did prepare a few words here, if you'll bear with me, to talk about why I have been doing some things in the community of the Tri-Cities and a bit about receiving the medal. First of all, I believe that we live in the kind of a community that we deserve, and I feel compelled to tackle those issues which speak to me. And first, it starts with a passion, a sense of energy to take on an issue which resonates. And you know, I normally don't go looking for it; they seem to find me. But I was thinking that mostly they provide me with an opportunity. It's a venue for my version of art. I don't draw. I've never been able to develop any competency with a musical instrument. But I do enjoy creating, and so that's what I do. But I build on ideas, and I give them shape and a form of action, and I do that on paper. I do that on a computer screen. And it just seems to grow over time and develop more facets and get engaged with more people in the community, and it's very much an organic process for me. As far as the medal itself is concerned, although I am a traditional, strong Canadian nationalist, I'm not a monarchist as such, and I don't have any particular reverence for the royal family. I believe that they're probably very nice people with quirky ways. But So the medal itself doesn't have a lot of intrinsic value for me, but what was very special for me was the fact that I was nominated by the council of the city of Coquitlam, and the manner in which the medal was presented to me. Over the years, I've made a number of presentations to the Tri-Cities councils, and particularly in Coquitlam, as part of my advocacy work, and some of it has been done under fairly stressful conditions, typically in public hearings for controversial projects. And my intent is always to be respectful and to be pragmatic, but you never really know how you're being received and the impact that you have on others. And I believe the kind of person we are is reflected in the way that other people react to you, and that's really the litmus test for me. And so receiving the medal was quite an honor.
Kathy Burpee. Kathy was presented with her award by Finn Donnelly, who's the Member of Parliament for New Westminster, Coquitlam, and Port Moody. The award was presented for dedication and commitment to making Coquitlam and the Tri-Cities region a richer, more diverse community. And her current activities include, and this is probably not an exhaustive list, I suspect, chair of the Society for the Community Development, a food bank volunteer. She's chair of the Tri-Cities Planning Partnership and committee chair at the Tri-Cities Homeless and Housing Task Group. Welcome, Kathy Burpee.
I'm really humbled to be standing here today with Anita, Dorothy, and Sandy. From my point of view, they have achieved so much on a grand scale. I have never thought about taking on the governing of the province. I've never dedicated my life to ensuring a better environment be left for our children, and I never ever would have had the big thought that we could organize services for our homeless neighbors, and in doing so, get a permanent shelter constructed. You see, I don't do big things, I do little things. The only exception to that has been my family. And I would still try to move mountains should Dan, Jill, or Sandy need me to. They are my rock, and I need them so much. From that source of strength and understanding and love, I go out and I play. I love being out and about, listening to people, hearing their stories and their visions for our community. I really enjoy any opportunity to encourage people to be empowered by their visions and to act to create the change they want to see. I can often help to connect people with others sharing their vision. And at times like this, I feel like I am knitting, helping to knot strands together. Community is what I see in front of me, my neighbor, the houses around mine, this congregation, or a group of people sitting at a table with a common goal, perhaps aimed at examining the needs of seniors or new immigrants in the Tri-Cities, and then moving forward to build the needed supports. My actions are based on making connections and building collaborations. Receiving this award has reminded me to look at one community very close to me, and one I forget about. It's the small group of women who partner with me in so many activities and who also worked on my nomination. Linda, Elaine, Susan, and Kim. We are such different people. We have very, very different takes on politics and religion. Some have considerable more money than others, and some have health, while others have health concerns. But the five of us, you know, we have never had an argument. We seem to have fallen into the habit of talking until we understand each other. And we find it easy, after so many years, to take guidance from each other, and we enjoy moving forward together. I doubt if apart from our interest in community, we would have met, and certainly we never would have built this bond. But from our meetings as board members of a small, quite insignificant society, we have built our own community, and using all our strengths, we have gone out and played. As to knitting, I've never mastered the art. My few attempts have not resulted in anything being near to square. But as for community, it's shapeless. It's only what you see.
Thank you very much. It's not coffee, folks. Although I wish it was. Our next recipient, of course, needs no introduction either. But I'm going to introduce her anyway. Anita Higgin was presented her award by Don Black, who's the MLA for New Westminster. Pardon, Winster. And it was presented for her community service, including serving on the school board as an MLA, helping to establish and lead the Western Society for Senior Citizens Services Society, which is now the Senior Services Society, and a lot easier to pronounce, offering the supportive services for the frail and elderly living at home, and leading the capital drive for Monarch Place, the city's first transition house for women and children fleeing violence. And she's currently, of course, a food bank volunteer, a hospice volunteer, and one of our most distinguished elders, Anita Higgin.
Thank you. Thank you, Sandy and Kathy. And Dorothy's not here. She did appear when we launched the book at the very last minute, and I've kept hoping that maybe she might do that today, but not so lucky. Whenever I think about now, I guess, 40 years of being involved in the community, I think mostly of the people I've been involved with. I honestly don't believe I would have done any of this work without those people, because in a sense, someone has always tapped me on the shoulder and said, "Would you like to be involved?" And from there, many different stories have emerged in my life. So whenever I have received any award, I have always felt that there should be a cast of people behind me, around me, with me, because it's they who really are the deserving recipients of any award. I simply represent, in some people's eyes, what a community can be. So I thought today I would just tell you a little story. It is the story of the Western Society, the Senior Services Society. It's the story I told the person who wrote about me in the book. But it's a story about those ordinary people that Kathy and Sandy have spoken about. I want to introduce you to a woman named Dorothy Stoberg, who was a welfare mother in the late 1960s, early 1970s, with four children. And Dorothy looked around her, and she saw a changing world in our small community of New Westminster. She saw many, many more people like me with gray hair, beginning not to move so freely, living still in their own homes, but maybe without a spouse, maybe without family, maybe in an isolated part of the community in terms of public transit. And she thought, those people aren't going to be staying in their homes without some extra supports. And with that mission and vision, she got going. And in a matter of a couple of years, she had up and running something in the community known as the Seniors Bureau. It had women driving people to doctor's appointments. It had people going into elders' homes, helping with some light housekeeping. It had people in the office who would fill out a form that just puzzled an older person, but that they depended on for getting income supports that were so important to them. And she needed a society. I don't know where she got that long name. She really had illusions of grandeur about how big this society, the Western Society for Senior Citizen Services, was going to grow. And I got tapped on the shoulder and became one of the founding directors of the board. Then tragedy, about a year later after I joined the board, struck. Dorothy was fatally hit with a cerebral hemorrhage and died in the office of the Seniors Bureau. It was almost prophetic. And those of us who were on the board were left feeling, what do we do now? Dorothy had assembled this wonderful group of women, one of whom was with me for years as I moved along in the board to become chair of the board and then eventually to take a modest paid position as director. And what we did in that period of time was to gradually extend and develop and pilot services for elders. I consider it a model of how much community development happens, and Sandy and Kathy have both talked about it. We kept our essential vision. Who were the people we were helping? We didn't compete. We didn't duplicate services that government was providing or other agencies in the community. But we knew we could do more. And so we got funding for pilot projects, for handyman services, for outings, for more information services. We said, we need a daycare for elders who are living with their family or living alone, so they've got some place to go where they're going to have socialization, some health services, some good nutrition. And we set up an adult daycare center. All of those services, begun 40 years ago, still exist in some way in our community. Not all under the rubric of the Senior Citizen Society. Some of them have been taken over by government. Handy Dart, for example, started with us and other groups in other communities. And every time Dennis arrives at the food bank in Handy Dart, I think, yay, look what happens when people do the kind of work that needs to be done. All of the people who worked with me and with others in our society worked as a collective. We worked collaboratively. I loved Kathy's comment. We didn't have an argument. If we had a problem, we solved it. We moved on, we moved up, we moved out, and in every respect, we were working with community. There are things you learn. Know your mission. Be true to it. Tell your story. Gather allies. Be prepared to move on as long as the mission is still there and the services are still there. And that's what building community is all about. And that's why the people who are a part of this little foursome that you are very kindly celebrating today are able to continue to do that work, because all of these elements speak to our Unitarian values, the inherent worth and dignity of every person, justice, equity, compassion for all, a commitment to process to enable these things to happen. And we couldn't do it without you here. I couldn't do it without the people that I worked with. So this is a celebration of not so much us, I think, but of all the people who join us in that endeavor in building community. And that's why I value this medal as a representation of the work and dedication and mission which so many people carry on so willingly and so fulfillingly in our community.
Well, Dorothy Beach could not be here today, which is unfortunate. But Dorothy, as you know, is very soon going to be 100 years old. She's a very remarkable woman. Her award was presented by Peter Julian, who's the MP for Burnaby New Westminster. And the award recognized a lifetime of work as an outspoken environmentalist, including advocating against widespread use of pesticides right here in Sapperton, when she led the crusade to stop spraying for gypsy moth, which would have sprayed pesticide all over this neighborhood and elsewhere in New Westminster. She has fought for habitat preservation of the Fraser River right outside our door here. And for her provincial, national, and United Nations roles as a member of the Local Council of Women at 99, and she is still an active member of the Fraser River Coalition. And Anita very thoughtfully sent out this link to an article, which I urge you, if you haven't seen it, this was in the Record. This is a wonderful story about Dorothy and some of her accomplishments, and the fact that she still lives in the same house where she grew up. Where she was born. Still sleeps in the same room. So to sum up, I think that we can fairly state that it's not the size of the community, it's how big its heart is. Now, I think the next song we're going to sing actually really personifies that spirit, because it's This Little Light of Mine. Now, I know what you're thinking. We sing this song a lot. We sing this song all the time. And it may be in our minds, well, it's getting a little old. It might be a little trite. It might be almost, you know, irrelevant. But let's look at the history of this song. Where does it come from? Well, it was written in the 1920s. It was a song for children written by a white northern pastor, a music teacher named Harry Dixon Lowes, who was inspired by several of the Gospels with reference to Jesus Christ and his teachings about light. Yes, Allegra, I said Jesus Christ and I wasn't falling down the stairs. Now, this song became a staple for Sunday schools all over the North in the United States. In 1952, the Ward Singers, the legendary pioneers of modern gospel, recorded this song for adults. And soon afterwards, Zilphia Horton adapted it further and taught it to Pete Seeger. And she was also the woman who taught Pete, We Shall Overcome. Now, that's mighty fine company for a song, in my opinion. It became an anthem in the civil rights movement in the 1960s, 50s and 60s. It was right up there with We Shall Overcome. So, not surprisingly, this Little Light of Mine can be performed pretty much any way you please. There's over 30 distinct versions that have been recorded. Some names you might recognize: Brenda Lee, Etta James, Nico Case, Odetta, Roger McGuinn of the Byrds, The Seekers, Sam Cooke, even Bruce Springsteen has recorded this song, folks. And there are some people you probably won't recognize. I didn't know who Professor Eddie Lusk was. Anybody? Trombone Shorty or Doc Foss. The point is, you can hear this song in doo-wop, country, blues, grass, gospel, pop. Even Ry Cooter wrote a version for Mavis Staples. So no matter who's singing this song, This Little Light of Mine remains a powerful song about personal freedom. Doesn't matter what the style you sing it in, it's got still that childlike celebration of power and optimism. And I like to think that this song is a lot like the heroes that we're celebrating today. It is not fancy. It is straight to the point. And yes, it can be repetitive. But if you want to change the world, being persistent and stubborn is a good quality. So let's sing the song. One. There you go.
Okay, it's number 118 in your black books. And we'll keep playing until we feel it's time. So you can sing, clap, stomp, whatever you prefer.
One closing thought, if I can find the right page. It is said, look famous, be legendary, appear complex, act easy, radiate presence, travel light, seem a dream, and prove real. And it's apt, but it's also St. Patrick's Day, and I think we'll close with an Irish proverb. You'll never plow a field by turning it over in your mind.
Could you join hands for the linking, please?